So I'll first just very briefly state what the Floss project was about, because we are only presenting one part of it. Floss is funded by the European Commission's IST program, and it's conducted by a consortium, which is the International Institute of Economics, that's at the University of Maastricht, and Berlin Research, which is an economic research private firm in Berlin. And it had, if you've seen the report, you'll see that it has basically four major parts. There is a survey of user organizations across Europe. And for budgetary reasons, that was actually only done in Germany, Sweden, and the UK. There was the developer survey, which is what we're going to present. And that is not Europe-specific, that's a global survey. There is a source code analysis, where we surveyed about 30 gigabytes of source code for various things, which you'll see on the report. Gregorio might say something about that in his talk, but that's not what we're talking about. And there is a survey of business models and best practices, where a section on political impact, usage in governments within Europe, and recommendations for policy. Those parts are all EU-specific, but the developer survey is not. And what we're going to do now is Rüdiger will describe the purpose and methodology, the characteristics, and the comparisons with closed source developers, and I will then talk about the motivations. We may take a break for questions in a minute.
As Richard just mentioned, I will start with the purpose and methodology of the FLOSS developer survey. And the purpose was first of all to find out more about the personal features of free and open source software developers. This means socio-economic background information and the demographic structure of this community. Second important point was to reveal something about work and project organization within the FLOSS community. Then some then the relation between open source and free software was one point, but we don't tell anything about that today. More important is the distinction between open source software or free software on the one side and on the one hand, and closed source software on the other hand. Next one was rewards, monetary as well as non-monetary rewards, which is going to be discussed in the future. And finally, a very important point, I think one of the focus of the study was motivations, expectations, and orientations of free and open source software developers. So, methodology, Bishop already mentioned that the developer survey of the study was a global one, so we had a random sample. The questionnaire was posted to important websites of institutions in the FLOSS community. It was an internet questionnaire. We had roughly 2,800 responses, and these responses just made sure that we already that we really got answers from open source developers. We verified this data by a comparison between our data and some data of developers we could identify. And so we found out that there is a strong coincidence of the two groups. The questionnaire was a really detailed one, 42 questions on demography, orientations, I already mentioned that. Now the first point I would like to present out of the results of our study is some aspects of the characteristics of FLOSS developers. So there is an image of software developers in the public. well known as NERD, and it goes back to Douglas Kaplan's book Microserves. So the first characteristic of such a NERD is a male, typically. He's home in computer sticking, only interested in software and ICT, earning relatively high incomes, and he has only software developers or engineers as friends, most of them known by email. An exception may also be the guy behind the desk at McDonald's. And he has a 16 to 20 hours working night, which is enabled by ever-increasing consumption of OZEC. So, as a consequence, most of them are singles. Particularly concerning free software or open source, many people think that this is mainly done by students. So this is of course a very negative picture of lost developers, and we wanted to find out if this picture is according to reality or not. And so the evidence from our data says that, okay, male, that's right, 98.9% of the whole sample were male. And the age, as you can see, it's ranging from 14 to 73 years, but the lion's share is between 16 and 36, and the average age is 27 years. So if we consider the starting age, we found out that it was approximately 23 years. Only 7% started developing PLOS in an age of less than 16 years, two-thirds have been between 16 and 25 years, and roughly a quarter was older than 25. So the civil status, we found that only 41% are really singles, and that the large majority of the PLOS developers was either married or coupled. So, 17% have even children, so the picture of the single PLOS developer is wrong. The educational background, you see A-level high school, university degrees play a very important role, so the educational background is, PLOS developers feature a very high educational level. But as you can see, a PhD is not necessarily important. So hours of work, that's maybe very surprising. We found that the large majority did not spend so much time as it is described in this picture of the NERD. So 22% do only spend less than 2 hours per week developing free or open source software. Another 26% do only spend 2 to 5 hours per week. And another 20% do not spend more than 10 hours per week. So, and one reason for that is he correlated this with the hours of work spent for developing proprietary software. And we found that, in general, those who spend much time for developing proprietary software do, of course, spend less time for developing PLOS. But we also found a group which spent, I don't have to, 40 hours per week for both, so 40 hours per week for proprietary software as well as 40 hours per week for open source software. So there are these really computer sticking people, but there are very few. So professional background, we see the students, which is this group, it's only the second large group in the PLOS community, while software engineers play the dominant role. Also, programmers are very prominent in this community, but the picture that students provide the lion's share is wrong. And what we also can see here is that this professional background, PLOS developers are really, they have a very strong professional background in the IT sector, of course. So we already distinguish between IT sectors and other sectors.
Yeah.
the students.
Okay. Employment status, okay. 2/3 were employees, 14%, which is a rather large share compared to the average share, which is between 7 and 11% per country in Europe and then the United States. So 14% were self-employed. 70% claimed that they are students and teach at no paid work. And only 4% were unemployed or were not working at the moment when we conducted our questionnaire. So the high incomes. What we found is that most of the FLOSS developers in the community do rather earn low or medium incomes, and that only very few really got these high incomes. I mean, interesting in this context maybe that the top groups are provided by those, or mainly provided by those, who do not play a very significant role in the professional structure of the FLOSS community. So we had consultants, we had executives from even from outside the IT sector, and those you find in the predominantly in the first two groups. And they also, these groups also play a role in an important role in leadership of projects. So it's not the programmers, it's not the engineers who really dominate the management, the management of these FLOSS projects. Okay, my conclusions. So the FLOSS community is very young and of course male. It provides a very high educational level, a strong professional background in the IT sector. Students are still the second largest group. Almost half of the sample do not spend more than 5 hours per week for developing FLOSS. Most are married or coupled. We have a relatively high share of self-employed and very few unemployed. And we found that high incomes are rather untypical. So this nerd image is totally wrong. As you can see, we have a very diverse community. And if you would like to characterize it in general, can present a picture that is quite different to that of the world. So, next point is the distinction between free and open source software and closed source software. Of course, we had developers in the sample who only developed FLOSS, and other developers who developed FLOSS as well as closed source software. You see that it's approximately half and half, so 52% develop also closed source software, and 49%, 58% develop only FLOSS software. And the question is, how are these different kinds of software valued? So one of our questions was, do you think that free and open source software satisfies today's requirements for software better than proprietary software? And you see that this is a clear statement for FLOSS, not surprising, I think. It's up to the respondents to interpret what they understand as requirements. So that's due to the method we choose. If we had open interviews, direct face-to-face interviews, then we could qualify these things.
Well, I'm saying that perhaps we're speaking. And then it's more of a nation stuff, and out of the organization, then it's not that good.
This is really a critical point.
It's an individual, so of course we do have a relationship between motivation and motivation and
so In this chart, we have a number of statements about things that are associated with software development. And we ask the respondents whether they think that this applies more to open source and free software or more to proprietary hosted software. And just concentrating on the blue and the orange bars, the blue indicate those who think that this statement applies more to FLOSS, and the orange bars represent those who think that this statement applies more to closed source software. And you can clearly see that negative items like developing software is usually associated with time pressure, which is on the bottom, is associated with applied more to proprietary software in the perception of cross developers. And the same applies to working in this area, it can be very boring, which is the third. While positive items like innovations are made in this area, or people write beautiful and effective programs, developing software is of high quality, and working in this field is joyful, is usually associated with loss. So they have a clear-cut picture of the two kinds of software, a very positive one of FLOSS, and a mixed and rather negative one of closed source software. I mean, innovations are made in this area is a typical statement which is perceived as as mixed. So they apply it as well to FLOSS as to closed source software. Then the importance of money in free and open source software communities and in closed source software. We asked that we offered two statements about the role of money. The first was people in FLOSS are more concerned about money than in closed source software domain. And 92% say this is not true, which is the large yellow part of the yellow pillar. The statement, people in closed source software domain are more concerned about money than in FLOSS, shows a rather mixed result. So 33%, one third of the sample say this is true and this is good. Still, the majority, 45%, claim that this is true but it's bad, and only 23% think that this is not true at all. So again, we have a very clear picture. So if we compare the two kinds of developers we have in our sample, only closed developers and developers who also develop closed source software, and then compare the statements I just presented, we find that regarding the question, if do you think that FLOSS satisfies today's requirements better than closed source software, there is a, of course, a difference, but it's not very strong. I mean, still, two-thirds of those who also develop closed source software think that this statement is right. And developing software is usually associated with time pressure. You see the same, both kinds of software developers are agreeing largely. Working in the street is joyful, surprise, surprise. Even those who develop closed source software associate this with open source software. So working in this field can be very boring. So this is kind of mixed. I mean, you see that it applies in both groups of developers to proprietary software, but also there are also a lot of developers who say that this applies to those. However, this result is one that is not significant. So it's only so we can't say that this is to be found in real life. goals. The statement that it developed software of high quality. You see, both kinds of developers apply it more to loss. Again, some apply it to both domains. So, people write beautiful pathetic programs. This is really clear. I mean, here we see a large majority who align this with loss, and relatively few say that this applies to both. Okay, and the innovation, it's like the general picture, so it's fully represented here, so it applies more to FLOSS and applies to both domains. Interestingly enough, there are only few who say that it applies more to proprietary software. So it's we found relatively low willingness to value closed source software positively. This is again the statement about money concerns. Again, this result is not significant if you consider the statement that people in the FLOSS domain are more concerned about money. It's not significant because almost everybody refuses the statement. And we see clear differences in the statement people in the closed source software domain are more concerned about money. Only FLOSS developers say that 28% of them say that this is true and this is good. More than half of them say this is true but bad, and a fifth of them think that this is not true. If we consider those who also develop closed source software, we find still 37% who say that this statement is true and this is good, so they really accept to make money in this, and to think about money in this area is correct. 38%, only 38% compared to the FLOSS developers claim that this is bad, and a quarter thinks that this is not true. Okay, so this is my part. If there are any questions to these two sections,
I do work, which is joyful for me. The only concern
he didn't correlate for many of these statements about the quality of work. I don't know if this correlation really exists.
Just correlate the other question I had before about the thing where it's got to move. I mean, we have the question, do they, are they concerned about money? This is good or bad.
Yeah, but there's one difference in the two questions, because the concern of the profession, the statement about the concern of money, addresses a general view on the two kinds of software and the two communities or whatever, while the statements that address the nature of work, the characteristics of work, address only the subject of experience. So,
I think you find out the two questions. You want to be kind of surprised about the result of the
answer. I do test this, as I mentioned. I'm not sure whether this correlation really exists, but I think that's a test.
This is the last question we have about society and something that's showing the difference between those who are developing the commercial software and those who are developing obviously software. Obviously those who are developing the commercial software as well will be less willing to say that it's bad to be interested in money than those who are not developing the commercial software as well.
We haven't presented this, like we've done a video which you will find on the website.
We asked the same question. We publish it on our website in the next 2 days.
People who do that because they also spend a lot of time developing the software. So they
especially in managerial positions, you know, they get a lot of finance.
The other question is
first of all, people who are unemployed are very willing to tell that they are unemployed. This is really truly reflected in the low shares. And the other point is that I think that many who are working on any kind of job would choose this option. So to say, I'm doing something, I'm not unemployed, or I earn some money. That's maybe the true point.
But I think also that if you look at the piece of the community, when we do a correlation with leadership or hours and income, when we do this whole thing, it seems that most people are not earning their income. But when you look at people devoting more than 20 hours a week, then they're typically earning more than 4,000 euros. And if you look at those correlated with leaderships and projects, number of projects developed, they're typically doing higher and higher.
Maybe I think we should go to the next section and then that's it.
We had a large part of the floss survey was to try and identify what are the motivations of developers, and that's what I will talk about now. In the literature, typically the economic literature on free software, you have various kinds of rewards based on who's writing models, and we can categorize them as monetary rewards, is direct, some direct form of income, monetary income. Signaling effects, this is typically from the rational expectations in the school of economists, such as John T. Rowe and Josh Lerner, and their paper says basically you can explain all of all they do. They use some data from stuff I had done earlier, but they basically say that you can explain everything in terms of signaling effects, which is I write 10,000 lines of code, which means that I'm a great programmer, so someone must hire me. So that's career concerns. Product-related reasons, that's, for want of any other term, that's what we called descriptions of motivation, such as I just wanted a better program of this sort, or I had this problem that I needed to fix, or something that's product-related. Political reasons, free software is good, and Richard's gone. Social aspects and fun, I do it to interact with people, or I like writing free software. So we go through them one by one. In terms of monetary rewards, we found that 46% don't earn money from this. That's the highest category here, but that's very low compared to, again, the general picture of free software, or at least the general picture till 3 years ago, or 2 years ago. Now, of course, there are lots of companies involved. These are, other than the first question, the rest are non-exclusive. So 54% do earn money from floss, but all the other numbers don't add up to 54%, they add up to much more because they are in different categories. So we have the dark blue ones earn money directly, and the other ones are earn money indirectly. So we are directly paid for developing floss. That's 15%, that's quite a large number, directly paid for developing floss. And that's because in the past 2 years, a number of large companies have actually hired people just to develop floss. And these are typically people who are describing themselves as executive or consultant or whatever, and are doing quite a lot of money. Directly paid for supporting floss is means that they're not being paid for developing, but they're being paid for providing support and, say, support to FLAWS projects, paid for administering FLAWS directly, other reasons we don't know what they are. It could be for evangelizing. And, indirectly, the first one is got the job because of FLAWS experience. So I was once at Women's Congress a couple of years ago, and Rusty Russell, who wrote the networking code in the kernel, said that he can probably charge people $500 to put their name into his credits file. Because if you say, I've got my name in the Linux kernel credits file, then you can easily get a good job. Indirectly, job description does not include FLAWS development, but you still got money. Indirectly, but I also developed FLAWS at work. That means I am working in a job where I can develop free software. I'm not being paid to develop free software, but I do it anyway, and I'm getting paid because of the whole thing. Indirectly, other reasons. Yeah. Yes, we have done that, and the income in the directory is higher considerably. Again, software is a source of main income. So we ask this question: do you earn your main income from developing, supporting, or administering software? And those who say they earn no monetary rewards from free software, they earn their main income from developing, supporting, or administering software, most of them, 60%. Which means that although they didn't say they earn their income indirectly from free software, unless they are working at Microsoft but writing free software on the sly, they probably get some benefits in terms of learning or in terms of even being job career prospects by the software. But it's not surprising that in that category, 40% don't earn income from software at all. So there is a group of 40% who don't earn income from free software, and they don't earn income from any software. Those with direct or indirect rewards, they clearly earn most of them. Most of them are their income from it. Which means that for them, free software is not a side business. It's what they're doing mostly. Again, this is a motivation. To make money is the reason to start, to enter the free software community. 4.4% said that to make money is a reason to start this. But once we asked two questions, what is your reason to start and what is your reason to continue in this community? And there were lots of different 12% said that this was their reason to continue in this community, which is very interesting. So it means that once you join the community, you discover that there are actually prospects to make money with it. Do you think there's a positive impact of experience in FLAWS and job opportunities? There were 1.8% who said that there is no positive impact. And I don't know why, but a vast majority said that there is a positive impact. And this is much larger than those who said, this overlaps with those who said that they don't get any monetary benefit. So they don't get a monetary benefit, but they still get a positive impact in job opportunities. So we tried to ask questions that ask the same thing in several different ways to increase the accuracy of the. If you look at signaling effects, to improve these were again reasons, reason to start and reason to continue. So the orange one is the reason to continue with free open source, and the blue one is the reason to enter. 33% of all respondents said that they started because they wanted to improve products of other developers. And that's a signaling effect in the sense that other developers, they know that I am a good developer, and therefore there is some value in, and this would not be possible without the free software phenomenon, because in proprietary software it's very difficult for me to signal that I have been developing. And that's something that increased again. It's more important as a reason to continue than it was as a reason to start. So one can argue that that is a significant signaling effect. Improve my job opportunities was like, and I got a pretty interesting response. As many as 24% actually looked at that as a reason to start. And obviously it worked for enough people to have it increased. Yet a reputation in the OSNFS community was not such an important reason. Although we talk a lot about reputation, it's much more indirect. And it's not a reason to start because, well, when you start, you know pretty clearly that you're not going to get a reputation very easily. And most people don't have much of a reputation in the community because reputation is pretty exponential, so the top few get all of it. So it's not... and to distribute non-marketable software products. So this is part... this is also a product reason. I had a software product. I didn't want to or was not able to commercialize it or was not interested in commercializing it, but I wanted other people to use it. I wanted to distribute it, so I made it free source. And that's again a signaling effect, because unless other people use my software, they won't know that I wrote it, and therefore they don't know what a great programmer I am. But that's not such an important reason, and that doesn't increase so much. Then we ask again, what are the questions, what you see the community as? So the FLOSS community is a forum to exchange knowledge, is a great majority, for innovative breakthroughs, for competition about the best code, but for people who look for partners and career improvements was not seen as very important. We asked again, expectations from other developers and what developers expect from you. So what you expect other developers to respect me and my contribution was a very high criteria. To write beautiful programs was another important aspect. Then we have product-related motivations, and this remains constant over time, to solve a problem that could not be solved by proprietary software. So this is very immediate. This is one of the classic user-driven, Eric Fontenot and the description of open source as basically a user-driven thing. Right? Users want something, they write their own code for it, and that's something. So that's quite a high percentage. 30% said that they wanted to solve a problem that couldn't be done with proprietary software, so they got it to open source. And get help in realizing a good idea for a software product. That was also a significant reason in the beginning, and it's even more so after that. Again, it's a forum for providing more variety of software, for innovative breakthroughs, for software developers who need a toolbox. What do you expect from other developers to solve a problem that could not be solved? Again, to answer your question, to help realizing ideas for software products, to improve products of other developers. So there is an expectation of other developers to improve products of other developers. So there's this, it's related, it's not related to signaling, it's not a monetary consideration, but it's related to the improvement of code, as it were. Then we have political reasons. 37% think now that software should not be a proprietary good. But when they joined, they did not think it's so important. So the community in itself is politicizing in a way. 30% did not think that this is a reason to start, but 37% do think this is a reason to continue. Again, when we correlate this, we find that this is more for the less active developers than for the higher active developers. So the higher active developers are, with a few exceptions, there is a small group of high activity, highly politicized developers. But higher activity developers are in general not politicized, and they're much more concerned about money or reputation or whatever, much less about politics. Whereas a large percentage of the lower activity developers are aiming for the politics. Again, to limit the power of large software companies is a political thing that was not there as an important reason to join, but is more of an important reason to continue. the community is a forum that enables more freedom in software development. This was universally thought pretty high, so 65% agreed with this statement. What do you expect from other developers to help limiting the power of large software companies? This was only expected by 80%, so it is not very high in terms of what you expect. You don't expect a high level of political involvement. Social motivations. To learn and develop new skills was by far the most important reason for joining open source, and it's also the most important reason for continuing. To share knowledge and skills is not that important to start because you don't have the skills, but it is a very important reason to continue. It is in fact just below learning and developing new skills is the reason to continue. And when we correlate this with people's years of experience in open source, share knowledge and skills becomes by far the number one. But this is with a demographic that has an average of about 4 years in open source development. Participate in new forms of cooperation is also quite a significant reason, and participate in the scene in general. When you were not in the scene, it wasn't that important, but as a reason to continue it is. The community is a forum to exchange knowledge. Again, this is also a social function and not just a function of signaling. It's for people using new forms of cooperation, for people looking for fun, people with the same interests, general discussions about software. Now, fun and same interests and things are not very important when you look at this graph as a whole. To exchange knowledge is far higher. What do you expect from other developers? To take part in discussions and communication? That's not so important. But to share their knowledge and skills is very, very important. This should be social expectations. So let me learn and develop new skills is less important, so the sense is of sort of autonomous activity. So you don't expect others to be responsible for your learning of the skill, but you do want them to share their skills. So if we look at the chart as a whole now, what we find is we group them in terms of social, political, product-related, signaling, and monetary reasons. You can see here the reason to start and the reason to continue. And the most important are social, but they aren't purely social. So learning and developing new skills is really important in terms of making money or in terms of anything else. And political is relatively not that important compared to skills and products. Now we compare briefly the motivations between open source and developers who also do closed source. Typically what we find is that developers who have any significant experience are also closed source developers or have income. So again, more political that I don't do anything other than open source may not be because I have great belief in it, but it may well be because, well, nobody's hired me in a software company, so I only do free software. Do you earn money from free software either directly or indirectly? If you compare the closed source also, that is less than the free software only in terms of... So there are more people who do only free software who don't earn any money from it than there are who also do closed source. But here there aren't too many differences that are significant, but you find that it is interesting that those who only do free software are much more in the directly paid for developing free software. So that's a clear monetary incentive. You're doing only free software because you are directly paid to do free software. If you look at again the same thing indirectly, got job because of Floss experience or also develop Floss at work. That's a much higher factor among those who also develop closed source. So I do free software, I got the job in a closed source company because of my cross experience. If we compare the various reasons between closed source and closed only developers, you find that closed source developers are less interested in the learning of skills, and that's because they have skills. The free software only developers typically have joined recently into the software community altogether. They are much lower in terms of political things. They are developing proprietary goods, so they certainly don't think that software should not be a proprietary good. So it's interesting that even that 25% of developers who are developing proprietary goods themselves think that it should not be a proprietary good. And it's also interesting that those who are proprietary developers joined the community because they wanted to solve a problem that could not be solved by proprietary software. They have more experience with proprietary software, which also means that they can see its disadvantages. Again, those who were proprietary software developers wanted to improve their job opportunities. It's the same thing for the reasons to continue, and there's much less difference here, except in the political one, that in the closed source developers, their political thing against proprietary software has increased somewhat, but for the free software only developers, it's increased much more. Now we divided our group into three degrees of activity based on three questions. We only use these three questions for this, and then we correlated it with other things that might also be indicators of activity. And it was interesting that there was a strong correlation which shows that these three variables were sort of verified. So the low activity group, they have less than six projects, they have leadership in less than three projects, and they have regular contacts in less than 10 developers. This accounts for 60%, so this is quite large. And the high activity group, which is only 7.7%, they have more than 10 projects, they have authored more than 10 projects, they are leaders of at least three projects, and they have regular contact with more developers. If you compare high activity with low activity, the low activity group does not earn money from floss, but only one quarter of the high activity group does not earn money from floss. 40% of the high activity group are directly paid for developing costs or supporting it or administering it. They are also indirectly got the job because of floss experience and indirectly develop floss support. So in terms of income, the high activity developers, which is a small number, but in fact when we look at the source code scan, they account for more than 60% of all the software written. The top 10% actually of developers account for more than 70% of all the software written. They are the most significant drivers of the movement, and they are getting paid for it. If you look at their reasons, the high activity versus low activity, the high activity is higher on almost every reason. They were more interested in learning and developing new skills, more interested in sharing knowledge. But they are less political. So the high activity group does not think that software should be a proprietary group, but it thinks that less. And as far as limit the power of large software companies, which is much more a political thing, there is an ideology and a rationale behind software should not be a proprietary good, but we hate Microsoft is purely political. And that's not a very significant reason at all for high activity goods. On the other hand, product-related issues are important as a signaling. So improving OS products of other developers is very important because these people are actually people who can improve other products. The low activity groups do not have the skills to improve. Again, make money is twice as important for the high activity group than low activity group, though it's not very important in the whole scheme of things. When we see the reasons to continue, again, it's fairly similar to the previous chart, except that you find that sharing knowledge and skills is now by far the number one reason for the high activity group, though it's still number two for the low activity. Participating in the scene is much more important for the high activity group because they are actually part of the scene in a much more active way. Again, participating in cooperation is important for them because they're cooperating much more. Their political thing has increased, but it's still lower than the political level in the low activity group. And improving products of other developers still remains important. What's most interesting is that make money has more than doubled as a reason. It's gone up from under 10% to 24%, so it's almost tripled as a reason in the high activity group, whereas for the low activity group, it has also grown, but it's about doubled. If you look at share, so So high activity developers and closed only and closed source developers. 6.2% of closed source developers are high activity, but 9.3% of closed only developers are high activity, which is interesting. So what we are seeing is a high activity is above average in closed only developers, but high activity is also above average by far in terms of getting revenue and monetary reasons. So the highest activity group are, which makes sense in that way, the highest activity group of developers are those who have been directly paid to do free software only. This is where you will find the PLOS report. The PLOS workshop in Brussels was more a workshop on future research in this area. The PLOS report has the developer report. It will also soon have this presentation. There's much more analysis there. And we will also have a place there where you can get the data for raw analysis. So we'd like to take questions now. And you can also address questions to the first part as well. Question like this? Yeah, this was not asked in a yes no manner. It was one question. What were your reasons to start developing? And these were all the options, and you could select all of them. And so it was, we thought of allowing it to rank, but that would have just been too complicated. No, you don't have to say no anywhere else. You can say, I'm interested in learning and developing and sharing knowledge and participating, and I think software could, you can say yes to all of them.
Yeah.
So that's what I was saying. We were thinking of ranking them, but that would have been impossible. As it is, this was a question that we got much less, we would have got much less response to this question if we had ranked it. If you tried to fill out the question, you would have found that this was quite a difficult question. So the ranking that we have is based on the number of people who selected this and not on a single individual's ranking, which is the most important piece. If we had just done, if our survey only had a question, if we had only wanted to focus on motivation, we could probably have asked people to list their motivation in order of importance. Yeah, that's what I mean by ranking. But then you have a matrix with, for one question, you have a matrix with 10 different options, and four different things, you have 40 different answers for one question. And that's just impossible. So it would be fine if we had, for instance, if we had a survey where we asked 5 questions on motivation, then we would have done that. But when we had, we would have to choose whether we wanted to provide more depth in this question, and then reduce the breadth, and we wouldn't have questions on incomes then. But if you wanted so many different things, we had to, in order to get any chance of people responding. Well, the meaning of the answers is something that we've drawn from the answers itself. So we aren't defining that this is what we wanted to know, because we, in, for instance, in the things of what you describe yourself as or what you think. We don't want to predefine, because predefining, especially on a survey, would if for instance when we asked how many projects have you been a leader of, we don't know what you mean when you said six, because we don't know what you mean, whether leader means you wrote 20% of it, whether you were just a coordinator or what. But if we had written using leader to define leader by these things or define project with these things, not only would you have not bothered to read through it, but it would have been our definition of something when we want to try and find out how leadership is defined and not the other way around. What Rudiger said about free software and open source, if we also had a question on identification of communities that's in the survey, do you regard yourself as a free software developer or an open source developer, or a part of the free software community or the open source community, the answer was the free software, open source, or I don't care. And there was another question, do you see these two communities as different in terms of principle only, but they work the same, or they're completely different ways of living and working, or I don't care. And we've done some analysis based on that and correlated that with political and monetary reasons, which I think is there in the report on that. But no, that was, we had to use the term free as well as open source since we were doing it based with the European Commission, which is actually probably the most active user of a libre software term, which even the French programmers don't use that much. We added Libre, and well, it's an acronym that now Richard Stallman likes because he doesn't like free and open source software, because he says then free is kept away from the software, and therefore it's better to say free software and open source, or plus, because free and Libre together keeps the meaning of free, whereas free on its own doesn't. So yeah. But now this term, we found that it's been used a lot by different projects, but when we came up with it, you have to have an acronym for the European Commission, and my acronym was free and open source software, study of users and developers, and FOSSUC didn't sound as nice as PLOS. Just as in anything else, people have a lot of different motivations, and which is why you can describe anything using economic theory or sociology or psychology or whatever you want, because people have several different motivations at the same time for doing something. And in free software, all that we found is we were trying to show these motivations, and now we can address some of the theories, and there is a validity in some of them, but I don't think you can make one broad conclusion to say that signaling or...
I would say that it's based on
there's a problem that you don't have to know what it is.
But on the other hand, the argument that people are doing this just for the fun of it and don't care about money is also clearly not true, because when you ask the other set of questions on you, so then it's like saying that we didn't do it because we wanted the money, but we are all getting money for it and we are very happy about that. So it just doesn't really match. So that's why we ask the questions in different ways. And I think in a sense, you're right. It is complex and there is a lot of detail. But that is because there is no one simple reason. Selecting its own was also part of the intention. We want to know what developers have to say about themselves, and because if you try to do it any other way, you have to define a model in which you want to fit them, and we do not have any data to be able to have a model that this is the reason that it's being done, and therefore let's find out how developers fit themselves into it. We don't have the data. This was a way of trying to get the reasons and get the data that developers themselves propose. So it tends to, I think, counteract most of the simple arguments for free software as being only because of fun, as Eric Grimmins says, or for signaling, or for we hate Microsoft. This is just a way of collaborating and creating something. So that's, and it's also important to note that political reasons are not seen as very important. And when we correlate, say, the most politically active group we find are those who say that we are part of the free software community and it's completely different from the open source community. Because one of the major things that happened with open source was the break from the politics of free software. And that community is 80% of the total respondents, and it's also underrepresented in terms of leadership, in terms of hierarchy. So if you look at it in terms of hierarchy or in terms of leadership, you find that the reasons, the politics is much less important, the learning and sharing are much more important. Money is not given as important, so important in terms of reason, but money nevertheless turns up. So that's also clearly an important thing. Several different categories. So to learn and develop new skills is social, but it is also clearly related to monetary concerns or signaling concerns, in that new skills help you in a job, as 88% of them say. But we have get a reputation in the open source community, which is, for instance, things like having my name in the Linux credits file. On the other hand, my position in the open source community helps me get a job. So it is not signaling in the sense that you're directly saying that you want to get a job. But what the signaling argument is that, for instance, Lerner and Tirol argue, they didn't even have a survey like this to give them their data, so they were just arguing on a theoretical basis. And they're arguing that people are trying to position themselves as important, and signaling in classical literature simply means that you just have to be noticed. If you are noticed among your programmer peers, then you will be noticed in the job market as and when the programmers translate themselves into the job market. So it's not necessarily limited to directly signaling in the job market. Especially the closer you go to the higher activity developers, they are less political, and if you're not looking at specifically in terms of software, they tend to be fairly autonomous in their thinking. So you will find in projects, discussion groups, for instance, that there is no agreement that the community thinks this. Not the community that thinks this, it's what you are saying this. Eric Raymond is not a speaker. There was a lot of objection to people trying to say that Eric Raymond or Richard Stallman is a representative of the free software community. Eric Raymond speaks for himself. Someone else speaks for themselves. Certainly in terms of political ideology, free software developers tend to be libertarian more than anything else. In Europe, where in general there is a much higher kind of socialist dream type of things, they are more linked to that, but in general you talk to free software developers and higher activity developers, they are fairly motivated by money. They are running their own consultancies, they have pretty clear understanding of business practices, and closer into a libertarian politics than anything else. Yes, we actually, this is Americans are underrepresented here. I'm not sure why, but probably because of the language issue that we translated into. For instance, the French are highly overrepresented in this survey. 16% of all respondents were French, and that was higher than anywhere else, which was overrepresented possibly because the French free software communities are more political in a grouping, that they act to have their voice heard, and also they read the French language boards more. Since we translated the announcement into French, a lot of them got it, whereas the Germans, for instance, read English and German language boards, and so the fact that we translated it into German didn't matter. But US respondents as such were only 12% of all the respondents. So, 12. That's very different from, for instance, the Boston Consulting Source Code Survey, which had 48% U.S. respondents, but they did pre-selection, and they actually selected leaders of active large projects in Source Code. So that would be the Boston Consulting Survey, which was a survey done with Source Code in OSDN. So I think you'll find it under osdn.com/hackersurvey or something. It's also referred to in the survey. Okay, that's all.